Before we get into Rajneesh proper, you know, there's an old saying on the street, you know, what goes around comes around, or as English poet John Donne said somewhat more eloquently a few years ago, he would lie with the dogs and must rise with the fleas. You know, as the caller said, people said Jonestown wouldn't happen. I noticed that at Brown University recently, and Mae Brussel brought this up on her broadcast, they were taking a vote as to whether or not they were going to institute cyanide to be available for all of the students to commit suicide in the event of a nuclear war, and they voted for it. So Guyana today, Rhode Island tomorrow, where the day after that?
That's right. And to quote one last great thinker of our time, namely Pogo, we have met the enemy and he is us. I saw that exact same thing, and I thought of the difference between 20 years ago when people were out on the streets protesting the war, the young people, and I'm not that old myself, folks, but I'm just saying this, not out of any kind of deep nostalgia, but 20 years ago the young people were out on the streets protesting the war in Vietnam. Nowadays the students are lining up to say that they want cyanide pills so they can opt out when the big casino goes down.
Commit revolutionary suicide, as Jim Jones talked about.
That's right. So perhaps maybe also when you talk about mind control, you have to talk on a larger basis, maybe not even an intentional basis in some cases, but maybe intentional, and about societal mental changes and the kind of society that is being built in some situations. Anyway, 415-941-2500 is the number.
Well, as far as Rajneesh goes...
Oh, yes, excuse me.
I don't personally know what... what to make of the Raj... Well, I'm very suspicious of them. The fact that they all tote guns around, and that makes me a little leery. On top of that, one of the things that's worth noting is the Rajneeshpuram is actually a municipality unto itself, and they have their own police force, and until quite recently, the Rajneeshpuram police force had access to the federal law enforcement computer banks about criminals, so that at least up until recently... They've been taken off it now, but they had... computerized access to all of the federal government's information about criminals and people who had arrests and convictions. So what use they may have been making of that, anyone could tell. Anyone might guess. And of course, they also were seeking out transients recently, ostensibly to boost their electoral power. And I'm kind of shaky about the group. We'll see what develops. It certainly looks suspicious, and I think the caller was very shrewd to make that equation.
Something that we will undoubtedly keep our eagle eyes on up
but
here.
Again, a very speculative note, and all of these things I think are worth distinguishing from the hard documentation presented earlier.
Right. 415-941-2500 with lines open, and good evening, Cupertino. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Hello. I wanted to know your feelings on the infiltration of Asians in the Bay Area that are taking jobs and schooling away from people that have been paying taxes for a number of years.
Okay, well, caller, let me first get you to define what you mean by infiltration by Asians. Are you talking about immigrants?
Yes.
Legal immigrants?
Yes.
Okay, well, if somebody is a legal immigrant and they are, in fact, working for a living, then aren't they, in fact, paying taxes?
Yeah, but let me give you an example. You know, if I go to sign up for a college class, and not exactly legal aliens, but also illegal aliens signing up for school and taking the place of a class that maybe I wanted to take, and here I am paying taxes and working hard on the side, and I'm not getting out of it what I think I deserve. I'm not prejudiced or anything like that, but... I think in fact, I heard the U.S. government has determined that the San Jose area is completely saturated by new coming Asians, and it's becoming out of control.
Well, if the situation really bothers you, you could always move to Asia.
Take up the empty space that they've left behind. No, caller, I have to deal with this in a fairly serious manner. First of all, I think that a lot of the things that you're talking about are things that are quite often rumors but have never actually been substantiated. I think that, in fact, if you look at it, that anybody who immigrates to this country legally, I think you have to admit, has as much of a right as any other citizen or person of similar status to the rights and privileges of our society, just like they have to pay taxes and all the other things. Now, as to illegal immigrants, people seem to have the idea that illegal immigrants come in and start getting on welfare and you know, taking away jobs and things like that. There have been many congressional commissions, and they have all shown, and it can be cited if you want to go look in the congressional record on some of them, that in fact illegal aliens, first of all, they wind up, when they do wind up in the workforce, they're usually taking jobs no one else wants. They're paying taxes that they can't ever collect refunds on because they are illegal, and most of them will never get involved in any kind of civic activity where they, like welfare or school or anything, where they have to show documentation like a social security number or something, because of the fact of the great fear in the refugee communities and the illegal immigrant communities of being exposed. So I think you have to be very careful, caller, to go out and find out what the truth of these things are before you succumb to, as far as what I'm concerned, is pretty much a campaign of rumors without substantiation.
Well, I can give you just a really quick example. I was privileged to be signed up in a county-funded schooling project with job training and all that. It was for low-income people. I'd worked part-time all summer, so I qualified.
Uh-huh.
And this particular situation was, I guess they had picked, they, you know, had to fill their quota on Asians, and they picked about 25 students, four Asians, and the Asians were the first ones to drop out because of the language barrier. They couldn't handle the class, and now these spaces are which are, I consider pretty valuable, are now gone because...
But, caller, I don't see the connection there at all. I'm sorry, you know, between people signing up for class and dropping out and some kind of an institutionalized plan to infiltrate, you know, Asians into society.
Well, see, another thing, caller, that I would add is that the large number of Asians coming into the United States now is in no way is not unconnected to American foreign and economic policy. Not only two Asian wars in Korea and Vietnam, but both those events have had a lot to do with the Asian influx into this country, but also the increasing exodus of U.S. industry and the involvement of American industry with Asia, and specifically here in the Santa Clara Valley, where electronics is considered the bread and butter of everybody. So many of the electronics companies do their assembly overseas. You know, it seems to me that... It's a little bit hypocritical for Americans to wage war in Asia, to move their industries over there, to take advantage of the cheap labor over there in order to reap enormous profits and achieve an affluent lifestyle, and then turn around and complain about the Asians in the country.
Okay, one last thing, caller, and because this is not really on the subject and we should move on, but let me just say one thing to you, caller, which is that I don't personally fault you, because it is a thing that I've heard a lot of people fall into, and I think a lot of it is just sort of rumor. But what I would suggest is that, in fact, the people that you should be upset about is not the Asian immigrants, most of whom are probably in no better shape or much worse shape than you are, but the people who are in control of the industries and the governmental machinery that has in the country that the Asians come from, or here in the United States, has forced them into the situations. But again, what I'm trying to say is that it's always the small people, you and me and everybody else who works for a living, that wind up getting played off against each other on issues of race and religion, whereas that's not really the problems.
Right. I didn't. If there's any illegal alien Asians out there, I'm not meaning to be prejudiced. I just want to know, you know, what's fair for the American people and
okay.
What's good for the American people, you know.
Well, as soon as somebody joins the country, they are Americans, and that's how it works. Anyway, we have to move along, caller, but again, I would just suggest to, you know, make sure that you can get facts on things, because a lot of people like to pass rumors along, and a lot of people don't know where those rumors come from, and a lot of times they're just not true, okay?
I was hoping maybe you had some facts.
Well, those are facts. The fact that that Asians are not taking jobs away, particularly from Americans, certainly not high-paid ones, not illegal immigrants aren't anyway. Legal immigrants maybe, but that's how it works. As far as they're not taking welfare away, there have been congressional studies, you know, that they're putting more into the system, the illegal immigrants, than they're taking out. Okay, so anyway, got to move on. Thanks for the call. Okay, back to the phones again with a line open, 415-941-2500, and good evening, Cupertino. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Thank you. This is a great show, as usual.
Thank you.
I wanted to tie in a story that I heard on KPFA this morning about DES, that they found that the women who took DES when they were pregnant, their daughters, they first found out that DES was harmful when their daughters developed cancer of the vagina, and... Now they found that 22 years after women take DES, that they're dying of cancer of, now I forget what it was, but I think it's like cancer of the liver or something like that.
although I should say I think I've heard some of these stories, and I think that there's a higher proportion is dying from cancer who took DES, but that it's not like they all are. It's like instead of 2 out of 1,000, it's 2.5 to 3 out of 1,000 or something like that.
Right, maybe more. Maybe this would be something that someone, you know, with perverse control of things might want to target a population rather than a specific individual with something like that. But, you know, it's interesting, though, that it plateaus at 22 years. You know, it's kind of interesting that a disease would time itself like that. I wanted to note that hormones in meat, you know, are routinely given to cattle, and, you know, any kind of animal that's used for fattening, they give growth hormones to, and hormones are like timing mechanisms for the body. And so if you can regulate a body's timing mechanism, it sort of figures to me that you can also set a time bomb in them, because you can set up like a... Well, I don't know. It's possible.
Well, no, I understand what you're saying, Carl. Yeah, I would have to say that that's a kind of an indeterminate and general way to do it, is to put burger bombs into the body politic.
Well, the thing that I'd like to make is that, you know, food additives do have an effect on the human consciousness, and this has been proven. Many growth hormones that are added to meat and chicken and so forth, and chemicals, particularly things like monosodium glutamate and so forth, do have an effect on human consciousness. So in that sense, I guess, could be said to relate to mind control. And, of course, the whole politics of poison, I guess you could say, with regard to additives, you know, all of the various poisons arriving in the environment, of course, does have a political side. Specifically, though, I'd like to know how you would like to tie this into mind control, and also encourage other listeners to stick to the subject here, because it's
right. The way I tie this in is through enough of these different things that you don't have to kill Martin Luther King's or something. You know, you can actually, you know, they can influence people in an adverse way. They can add pressure through stress, through targeting a certain population with all the, you know, like the poor with an anti-welfare type bill and stuff like this. And if they trigger it all at the same time, and they routinely do not give correct nutritional information to people, you know, places like McDonald's or other places like that tend to flourish. And
Well, I agree with that. My point would just be that it's an awfully broad and general way.
Okay, another thing to tie this in would be also that nerve energy is an important denominator in our body. We work off electrical impulses to a great extent.
Mm-hmm.
And ions in the air, they found that positive ions in the air and negative ions in the air have two different mood-producing abilities. And also in Brain Mind Bulletin, which is edited by Marilyn Ferguson, who wrote some best-selling novel about how things were going to get better or something like
that. The Aquarian Conspiracy.
Right. She mentioned that feeling tones were the way that your brain stores information. So if you can affect moods through bad nutrition, and if you can affect moods through ions, and or you know, like some sort of bug in someone's head, which would produce electrical changes, then it'd be you know, there's a lot of possibilities if you can manipulate someone's moods. What I'm saying is that your brain stores information regarding the feelings. And if you can control someone who's to make them depressed 100% of the time, then they don't have access to the information that they've stored when they're happy, and they do have access to the information when they're depressed.
Okay.
Someone like Candy Jones, she might have led a very happy life for a period of time, and then boom, she was compelled to live life in a very dangerous situation. Another book that ties in, I think, is Linda Lovelace's Ordeal, which she pretty much blows the lid off the porn racket by showing that a lot of these women are compelled at gunpoint to perform before films, and they're made to have set smiles on their faces.
Okay, well, again, now before we get off too deeply into this, I'm going to have to wrap that up.
Okay, I'll take everything off the air, but I think I said what I need to say.
Okay, thanks for the
call. Thanks a lot for your show.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I have some doubts about the Linda Lovelace thing. There was recently just a congressional thing where a bunch of women who are pornographic movie actresses all got together and said, they don't do that to us. You know, we're doing this because it's we like doing it and it makes us a good living. So, I mean, obviously they're not all probably feeling that way.
In addition to that, that caller provided us with the pun of the year, perhaps, but let's move on.
Okay, back to the telephones again, 415-941-2500. Good evening, Los Gatos, and welcome to KFJC.
Hey, I just want to know, like, who do CIA guys think they are? Totally poisoning the minds of people and telling them to commit suicide in 10 years, I mean...
Well, I think that's a good question. Now, who the heck do they think they are?
Call them up and ask them.
That's right.
Well, no, I mean, isn't there somebody in Washington with enough power that if we can prove it to them that all this stuff, you know...
Well, this is one of the reasons, Colin, this is indeed not meaning to make light. This is a good point, which is, citizen oversight, and this is one of the reasons we're suggesting that perhaps when the flack began to come out and the spit began to hit the fan about MKUltra, Operation Artichoke, and Bluebird, and all these things, that in fact that perhaps, and it's a speculation, but perhaps that programs like Guyana were set up so that they could take place outside of the control of the Senate Intelligence Oversight Committee and things like that.
Beyond that...
Can we have no power?
Well, Carter, the thing is that the very question you asked, isn't there somebody in Washington who can sort of bring these characters to heel, really touches on what could be called the overall theme of the three broadcasts on the station. Well, four, accounting Radio Free
America.
Well,
I know, but I mean...
But the thing is that you asked, isn't there someone in Washington? Well, President Kennedy was attempting to gain control over the CIA, and they cut him down in Dallas like he was a pimp on a downtown Saturday night. The answer is, as of this moment, no. It would appear that the intelligence agencies have a very firm control over the government.
Another example is that Jimmy Carter, when he came into office in 1976, was very much aware of some of the things that the CIA and other groups had been responsible for, and he was himself rather upset and perhaps even, one could say, frightened about the prospects of having to deal with a rogue organization of this type, and he was trying to push through Theodore Sorensen to be head of the CIA so that he could start his own clean-out of the CIA.
Yeah. Theodore Sorensen's, quote, good guy or something?
Well, Theodore Sorensen was apparently somebody responsive enough to Carter and to the Democratic liberal contingent, I guess, that they felt that he could make
Carter's
some
puppet?
Progress. Theodore Sorensen, though, was resisted so strongly by the hardcore of the CIA that they had to settle on a compromise candidate, Stansfield Turner, who did basically nothing. He was probably a benign presence, but a benign presence in the sense that, say, a dust puppy in the corner is a benign presence. He certainly didn't have any great effects on the CIA. So, again, at least a couple of presidents have tried very strongly to come to grips with the CIA, and at this point, the Reagan administration is currently, quote, unleashing them again. So, it is a difficult problem.
Why don't we just, take a vote and get rid of them altogether?
Would it were that simple. One of the things we talk about so often is the incorporation of mafiosi and Nazis into the intelligence system, and neither the mafia nor the Nazis are known to pay much respect for authority, and if you try to get them to do that, usually they get rid of you.
Yeah, and they don't usually get voted in, or at least not after the first time. But no, seriously,
join them?
Seriously,
the mafia in there.
Well, we're not suggesting you join them, but we're suggesting that you...
No, not me, the CIA and the mafia.
Well, that goes back a long ways, and I don't think it was if you can't fight them, join them kind of a decision. It was like, hey, it works for them, let's us try it too. But to be very serious, your call is a very good one and a serious one, and I don't know if we necessarily have the resources here to talk about the kind of political activity that are needed to curb this kind of thing. We're just trying to, first of all, sell people on the idea that this stuff does exist, and hopefully other people of less researching bent, but of more active bent would then,
I know, but like lots of people don't take it seriously. Like I tell my mom some of the stuff that I hear on your shows, and she'll be all, that's not true. No way, it's just a bunch of commies.
Two quick points, caller. As far as people not believing it, one of the things we constantly emphasize is that people tape these shows off the air if they can so that they can relate the record, maybe make some notes so that you can quote some books and some sources. That's one thing. And, with regard to what can be done, that again touches on sort of the motivating force behind this show. What we're trying to do is to equip people with the information so that they know what's going on, which is always the first step towards correcting something. And the reason we use this hard documentary format and sort of hand you the information on a platter is so that you and all of the other people in the audience can begin to take some action to try and correct it, begin informing people, because we can't do the job, and certainly if Kennedy couldn't do it, we can't do the job, but the idea is if you get enough people out there who know what's going on, they can bring about the changes.
What do you suggest I do if I wanted to do this, if I wanted to help my country?
I would suggest learning the information first of all, and then going out and not only talking to people privately, but also phoning up talk shows on other stations, and quoting sources is a real good way to do it. That's why we hand out the information. And it gets discouraging having people tell you to put it someplace, but the thing is that one of the things to keep in mind is that issues generally are decided by about 5% of the population who get active on each side, and the other 90% sit around and accept whatever results the two contesting 5% come up with. And so even if you get one person in 10, that's quite good results, and all that really will be necessary in the end.
Okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call. I should just say, well, we have a phone line open at 941-2500, two lines open now, actually, and before I go to the next call, that just to give you an idea, again, of the kinds of things that can happen when people are introduced to this stuff. Now, my own personal grandmother, who is a wonderful woman, but who about 10 or 12 years ago or so, when Ronald Reagan was governor of California, was not particularly interested in politics, thought Ronald Reagan had a nice smile, he was a nice man, he was a nifty guy, and voted for him, and you know, really was pretty conservative in her values. Because of the fact, now again, this is where getting somebody to listen to you is important, but because of the fact that I was a relative of hers, began to listen to some of the stuff that we were doing, began to read the newspaper, began to follow this kind of stuff, and has gone through a complete 180-degree switch, and she is now actively interested in politics, and she is a senior citizen. I mean, this is a late-in-life change. Is actively interested in politics, cuts things out, sends them to us up here at KFJC, goes through all kinds of stuff, and really knows her stuff, too. Again, just because she was given the opportunity to hear this information from somebody who she at least had reason to listen to. So this is when the caller's talking about his mother or something. This is perhaps the kind of approach that you can take with people. Anyway, back to the phones again. There's a little private Nip/Tuck family anecdote. Good evening, Oakland. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Yeah, hi. Earlier you were talking about, like, the family, you know, connections, like Layton and his family's background and the Hinckleys.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the World Vision commercial, and it kind of struck me odd that the guy doing it was Art Linkletter, and then it may have some kind of theory that Gary Linkletter could have been the Zodiac or something like
well,
that.
Well, it was Robert Linkletter who may very well have been the Zodiac killer, and who also apparently had some connections to the Manson family. People apparently had been involved. People who knew him quite well testified that, alleged that Robert Linkletter had in fact been either the Zodiac killer and or a leader or a functionary in the Manson organization.
I'm not familiar with this particular stuff that Dave's talking about, caller, but I do know that it's common knowledge that Art Linkletter's daughter, Diane Linkletter, supposedly jumped to her death under the influence of LSD. For what that's worth.
Yeah, that's what. That's what I mean. The connection between families is what. It got to me because I heard the maids talking about Robert Linkletter. I thought she said Gary, but Robert Linkletter could have been him. And then I see Art Linkletter doing commercials for World Vision.
Also, according to the same people who maintained to me that Robert Linkletter was involved with Zodiac and Manson, his daughter did not take LSD and jump out of a window, but his daughter found out about her brother and attempted to inform the authorities and was thrown out a window, basically, or went out a window one way or another. Interestingly enough, apparently also her brother-in-law, I think Robert Linkletter's sister's husband, also supposedly committed suicide, and again, apparently the same people, and again, this is private statements to me, the same people maintained that he also had attempted to inform the authorities of what Robert was up to, and was deep sixed for his trouble.
This is all news to me, but I think that there's an appropriate phrase that springs to mind here, which is Art Linkletter's own, which is, well, hey, kids do the darndest things.
Well, this is from a mate about 4 or 5 years ago, so about, you know, 1980 is the information.
Right, kids do the darndest things. Go ahead, caller.
Okay, that's about it, but I wonder, if I'll take this off the air, what was Richard Nixon's, again, involvement in bringing Reverend Moon over here? I forget,
I don't think we didn't say about Reverend Moon, but the Saran family, some friends, some political friends of the the Nixons, basically, and personal friends and political allies were a sponsor of the Saran family's entry into the U.S. The Nixon administration did have connections to the Moonies. Notably, the Moonies supported him very loyally during Watergate.
Right. We also have talked in the past about Richard Nixon was almost personally responsible for sponsoring in a Romanian fascist by the name of Nicolae Moloxa into the company and set up, through Nixon's own law firm, a dummy company so Moloxa would have an excuse to come into the country. And Moloxa was the funder of the Romanian Iron Guard, who had pogroms all over Romania and killed thousands and thousands of Jews during World War II. So that may be also something that you've gotten wrapped in there.
Okay, well, thanks, guys.
Thanks for your call.
Okey-doke.
Bye-bye. Okay, back to the phones again, 415-941-2500. And good evening, Mountain View. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Hi.
Hello.
I wanted to ask Dave a question. I don't know whether it's appropriate to talk about it, but I was listening to Mae Brussel, I think it was last night, and I thought I heard her say that Gordon Novell had told you that he had done something to a certain publisher.
It's not appropriate to talk about, simply because I spoke with Novell for a long period of time off the phone, off the air, rather. I played about a half-hour excerpt from a guest appearance I did on KOME, and played that for you. Then Novell and I spoke for about 45 minutes off the phone, and I don't know how much of that. I spoke to May. May and I are good friends, and we talk all the time. And I related some of the information to May. She then put a little bit of it on the air. I don't say to May, listen, you can say this on air, and you can't say this. But the information that Novell talked about off the air, I don't necessarily feel I'm in a position to talk about. Novell is not an individual you want to cross, and it's just not something that I'm going to discuss. However, if people would like to find out something about it, then they can order Mae Brussel tape 676, and the address is Post Office Box 22511, Carmel, California, 93922, and send a stamped self-addressed envelope if you want to order it, and then you can hear what Mae said, if you didn't catch what she said on the air.
Well, that's having your cake and eating it, too. I like that. That's good. I like that. Won't discuss it, but if you want to hear about where it was discussed, here's the address. Okay, there you go. See, we're a clever bunch up here in the radio world.
It's just a question of the fact that, again, Novell, off the air, he talked about a lot of things. We had quite a conversation, and I asked him specifically if he would mind if I played the section of the tape, of our conversation on the air. And he, with what I took to be a little degree of alarm, or certainly surprise, asked, you're taping this conversation? And I emphasized, no, that was the part on the air. He said a lot of heavy things off the air, and if this was coming from someone else, perhaps I'd feel free to talk about it. But Novell is notorious for suing people who cross him, and one thing I will tell you he said off the air, and it was one of the very last things he said, is he said, quote, one of these days I'm going to get wet as hell with all the people who have ever crossed me, meaning he's going to kill them. And again, so
nifty guy.
Take that as an advisory.
Well, did I really feel for you? You must have been shocked.
I thought it was pretty evident when I played the tape. At first, you get a lot of people messing with you when you do this kind of work, and I start giving you the raspberry, so to speak. At first, I wasn't sure, and I wasn't expecting to find myself talking to Gordon Novell on KOME at 3 o'clock on a Monday morning. But I tell you, you could have, I was sitting in my water at that point. There was no question about it. Plus, I when I came out, I found the door, the lock on my car door on the passenger side unlocked, and I was quite sure I locked it. So I don't know whether I simply blew it or whether there was a warning of sorts there. You're in a position to make out for yourself.
I should just cut in real quick and mention, for those of you who are not familiar, that Gordon Novell's name, the reason why it's being bandied about so, is because it comes up quite a great deal in connection with some of the things we've talked about. He claims unfairly in connection with the John F. Kennedy assassination. He himself admits to some involvement with Charles Colson and Watergate and the erasure of tapes, although he claims that the act was never done, but that he was consulted about it. So for those of you out there not familiar with the names, that's who we're talking about. And Dave was caught on the air at KOME doing another show, sitting in as a guest, in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, talking about Gordon Novell, when Gordon Novell all of a sudden picks up the phone and starts talking to him. And I must say, I think Dave handled it very well under the circumstances, because most of us would have been pretty much sucking air and having our eyes bug out at the sheer bizarreness of having Gordon Novell call you up on a San Jose radio station at 3 o'clock in the morning.
If it had been TV, you would have seen my eyes bugging. I certainly was nonplussed. I wasn't able to sleep all night. I mean, I wasn't afraid, but I was just energized. I mean, I was afraid when Novell first called, but you never know. I mean, it's just the future lies ahead. I sure would. My mind was thoroughly blown. I hadn't imagined that at all. And,
I think it's like bullets, though. I think it's the ones that you hear, not the ones that are going to get you.
That's exactly. I figured, it just. But it certainly It was a shock. It was a real shock.
It was.
Anything else, caller?
Yeah, I just wanted to know how likely you thought that was. As I recall, his story was he was driving somewhere, flipping the dial on the radio and just happened to come across the show and then and managed to spend almost 2 hours talking to you on the telephone. What, was he calling from a payphone?
That's what he said. Well, I don't know if he was calling from a payphone. I didn't hear the usual clicks, you know, unless he was doing a credit card thing. I don't know.
He's an electronics whiz, isn't he?
Yeah, he's an electronics whiz. Maybe he has a car phone. I don't know. But
blue box.
You don't know. I mean,
creepy.
Well, I don't know what the story was, but I find it a little hard to believe that it was accidental, but, you know...
It's just another addendum to the world of conspiracy and coincidence, you know?
Well, you never know. I found it a little hard to believe it was a coincidence. On the other hand, you know, at 3 o'clock on a Monday morning, there's precious little radio around, and, you know, most stations have, you know, nothing at all. Either they go off the air, or they have a lot of really boring talk, and, you know, if you're an intelligence driver, he is now, among the places he's based is Los Angeles, and, if you're an intelligence agent, you know, I mean, what would you rather hear? Hear about, you know, somebody telling you how to, you know, mulch your geraniums or listening to talking about stuff like this? I'm skeptical of whether it could have been an accident. I don't know. I mean,
my next question, did you ask him what, I don't remember hearing what he was doing in this area.
I didn't ask.
Didn't even ask.
The implication was that he was on business driving from Los Angeles to San Francisco, as I recall, but it was just an implication.
What I asked him about, both on and off the air, were generally either things which were already a matter of public record, or I asked his opinions of why certain things went on. For example, I asked him what he thought about L. Fletcher Prouty's thesis that the CIA had deliberately deep-sixed the Bay of Pigs, and he said he felt that it was probably, he thought it was accurate. He, you know, didn't say for sure, stuff like that. I didn't pry into his affairs. One of the Novell is notorious. I mean, he's received a lot of publicity for suing anybody who crosses him. I mean, he has lawsuits against all kinds of people, and as I indicated on the air, you know, I
get sued.
Well, not a question, not so much getting sued. I thought was about the least thing I was afraid of. You know, he's not an individual I'm in a position to mess with. That's all there is to it. He's so far above me, right? That I can't play with a guy like that.
One more thing, then I'll go. Is May still getting these voices over her television set?
Not recently.
Okay. Well, good night.
Okay, thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Okay, back to the phones again. One last call here, and we're going to get him on right now. Good evening, and welcome to KFJC.
Hello, Nip and Dave.
Hello.
Well, I just want to comment and say you guys are doing a good job.
Oh, well, thank you.
All time, you know, society got some information, you know, good information, you know, what's happening.
We do our best.
Okay. Second of all is I want to comment on the information about the mind controller and candy.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and I'd like to tie it in with TV. You know, television.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty big thing, too, you know, as far as mind control, because all it, from what I see, you know, it shows a lot catering to the white people, okay, blonde, blue-eyed, okay, and the rich also, white, being white and rich.
Oh, that's a biggie these days, yeah.
Okay, and like you were saying with Candy, you know, how she was, you know, the mind control as far as turning hatred, you know, towards blacks, Jews, you know, and looking at TV also, the way portrays, you know, how you see on commercials, where it's just, you know, catered to the white rich.
Right.
Period.
Right.
You know, so I'm just saying, you know, it may be general, but at the same time, you know, it's mind control there as far as that.
Well, I think that again, now to make a point I made with an earlier caller, and I don't think you're saying this, but I think that obviously one has to avoid the idea that, you know, the real general things are conspiratorial, and I don't think you're saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, though, what one has to look at, and I think any sociologist would agree, is that these kind of unconscious indicators that follow other sorts of indicators. In other words, that when it seemed to be socially correct in the 60s and early 70s to portray as many minority groups as possible in a more human and interested light, there was a great deal of that going on in the mass media, all the mass media. Now the message seems to be, and again the question can be, where's the message coming from, whether it's direct or implied, but the message seems to be, hey, we don't have to worry about minority groups anymore. If we're going to have black kids on TV, we can give them white parents, you know, right? I mean, how many shows are there with black kids with white parents? I mean, that's weird stuff. And that, you know, it's all right to be rich and nasty and from Texas, you know, right? And Dallas no longer means, it's no longer who shot JFK, it's who shot JR. I mean, you know, the implication is definitely there. Now, it's undoubtedly, the argument could be made very strongly that it's merely the perceptions that it's no longer necessary to cater to other than sort of the white lumpen mass out there, you know, the great wonder bread of society. But you know.
It's also worth noting too, you know, what fools a lot of the ethnic characters who are do make their way into various situation comedies or melodramas. An awful lot of the time, they're real fools. It's you don't see it quite as much as you used to, but for a long time you had, well, it was something to keep an eye on, particularly in your syndicated reruns of various shows. Take a look at what kinds of people are cast as the criminal types. An awful lot of hippies, blacks, and so forth are cast. Streets of San Francisco, I remember, was notorious that way. They had, you know, all the villains were hippies or blacks. You know,
it was sort of like a weekly Clint Eastwood movie. Yeah.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, well, very good. Well, listen, caller, we got to run. We're just about out of time.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
Keep up the good work.
Okay.
Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, that is the top of the hour almost, and we're just about out of time here, and we've been here just about all day, and I think we're ready to go home. We will be, as we mentioned earlier, continuing on. We will probably be covering in a future Radio Free America the subject of Jonestown in some depth, because it's an exceedingly complicated and fascinating story. And we will have other Radio Free Americas, too, on other subjects besides mind control, as previously stated. So anything you wanted to wrap up with, Dave?
I think we've pretty much said it. And I think at this point we'd be gilding the lily if I did.
All right. I'll buy that. So rather than gilding the lily, we shall leave said floral centerpiece unadorned and move on. Just want to mention, of course, that Dave Emery is available on his own Hard Rain here on KFJC.
Yeah, that's what we should mention, the other programs. Yeah,
there
listen, for those of you maybe tuned in for the first time or sort of just getting your feet wet, this is one of a whole battery of shows we have here on KFJC. First of all, Nip Tuck, the fellow who is to my right here and manning the controls, has a phone-in talk show on Sunday nights from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock called One Step Beyond. Deals with the same kind of material as you've been hearing here in a general sense, and tune that in. Stay tuned right afterward from 11 to midnight for my own show, Hard Rain, a half hour of information followed by phone calls. And also, the aforementioned Mae Brussel, the Dean of Researchers in this field, her World Watchers International series is aired Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, repeated Wednesday at 9.
All right, so button, who's got the button? Time for us to roll on out of here. We hope you will join us for some of our other programming, and we will be announcing when the next Radio Free America broadcast will be aired. Once again, this is Nip Tuck for Dave Emery. Thanking you for joining us and listening to Radio Free America here on KFJC, Los Altos Hills.